Kevin Youkilis joins us on Sports Byline, former first and third baseman who played double-digit years in the majors, primarily with the Boston Red Sox, where he won two World Series titles, 2004-2007. Known for his ability to get on base, he was also a Gold Glove-winning first baseman who once held baseball's record for most consecutive errorless games at first base. And an intense performer on the playing field, Youkilis was known for his scrappiness, grittiness, dirt-stained jerseys, and home plate collisions, and he certainly did star in the postseason, hitting .306 and winning the World Series title, as I said, twice. Let's go back to where it began. Take me back to growing up as a kid in Cincinnati, Kevin.
Yeah, so I grew up in Cincinnati and started out my first 4 years in Roselawn. And then moved to Montgomery, where my parents still live to this day. Just one of those kids that just loved going out there, playing all kinds of sports, being a huge Reds fan, being a huge Bengals fan, and just enjoying those Midwest roots. Was raised by, two parents that, taught us how to be as the best we could as three boys growing up. And I was just very, very lucky to have a good childhood and growing up in the Sycamore School District, and then went on to go to the University of Cincinnati to play baseball. So that took me through 22 years of my life, and then finally got drafted by the Boston Red Sox in 2001, which has taken me all over the country and world.
Who on in the Reds was your favorite player?
Oh, good question. There was, I think for me personally, Pete Rose was such a huge influence on us all. When he was a player and then became a player manager, and we just heard the stories, and our dads all told us, this is the way you play the game, and he's one of the best players of all time. So Pete Rose is a person we kind of idolized, the sense of how we went about playing the game. But I love guys like Eric Davis, Barry Larkin, Paul O'Neill when he was at the Reds. There was a guy, Cal Daniels. There's so many guys that I can name that I loved so much growing up, and had a lot of great memories of watching them play, and it really helped me, I think, just become a better baseball player by having such great ball players that came through the Red system that we got to idolize in the backyard of wiffle ball and on the baseball field.
Tell me about your dad, because you describe him as a well-known third baseman in the Jewish Community Center Fast Pitch Softball League.
Yeah, the stories that all my dad and all of his fast pitch softball KCC friends talk about is that those are his glory days. So he definitely was one of those guys that loved playing fast pitch softball and loved being around his good buddies. And I remember as a kid, we'd go out there and hop the fence on, I think it was Sundays that we'd go, and I got some funny pictures of me in sweatpants and no shirt on, and this huge glove out there. But I just remember going out there and just trying to catch the BP fly. They'd hit these softballs, and we would just go out there and run around as little kids and try to catch them. And I just remember there was one gentleman that was really nervous and scared that we were out there. And my dad once said, he goes, "What are you so worried about?" He's like, "These kids catch better than half the team." So that's how we started getting our experience, was just little misfits running around the JCC softball field.
You played your college ball, as you said, at the University of Cincinnati. That was your dad's alma mater. And also, I did not know this, but your longtime idol Sandy Koufax went there as well. I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, so Sandy went there for basketball. And back when Sandy was there, there was like freshman JV and varsity. And the coaches on the sports programs coach multiple sports. And so the freshman baseball coach was also the head basketball coach there. So he just I think there was the story went where they were playing in the field house and one day, and the guys were throwing a ball, and he saw Sandy throw a ball, and he was like, "Holy cow, this guy's got an arm on him." And so he went to Sandy and said, "Hey, man, you play baseball?" He's like, "Yeah, I played some baseball back in New York City." And Then he said, "Well, you got to come out for the baseball team." So he goes out for the baseball team, and next thing you know, the stories are hilarious about how wild he was and trying to catch him. But he just threw hard, and he figured it out. And next thing you know, he got drafted in the next year, and I think the rest is history. He's a Hall of Famer.
I love this quote from the former Boston scout Matt Haas about you, describing you. He says, "At first glance, not a lot. He was unorthodox. He had an extreme crouch. His thighs were almost parallel to the ground, and he was heavier than he is now. But the more I watched him, the more I just thought, throw the tools out the window. This guy can play baseball. Do you smile and laugh when you read that description of you?
Yeah, what's funny is I guess their eyes were perceiving them, because I was the same way from college all the way into pro ball. So, you know, it fluctuated here and there, and through the nutrition and weightlifting that we got along the way. But I think the hardships came because people overlooked me. I got overlooked in college, but I could compete in the city with all the great guys that were getting either drafted or going to big schools. And UC provided that opportunity for me to showcase my abilities. And we got to play in the Conference USA and travel down to the South, where there's you know, some better baseball. And my career and time at Cincinnati was everything to me. It was such a great learning lesson on how to not worry about what everyone's doing and just keep your focus on getting better every day. And I just kept my head down and tried to keep getting better and better, and didn't matter how much, you know, where I was drafted. And took me to my senior year, but I got drafted, and you know, the rest is history with that too.
Did that cause a little bit of a chip on your shoulder that you used as motivation all throughout your career, Kevin?
Oh, 100%. I think I had so many scouts that said some things, and, you know, looking back, it was hurtful in a lot of ways. I think there was one scout, I remember I ran one time and got under a 7 in the 60, and he looked at you know, the time, and he said, there's no way, run it again. And lo and behold, I did it again and ran the same time. And I always just felt like I had to prove myself. And it was a very good thing in the sense of I never took any day for granted, never took an at bat for granted. I just kept getting better and better and trying to hone my craft. But on the other end too, you know, a chip on your shoulder, if you just keep trying to prove your worth, sometimes you can kind of get overextended and trying to prove people wrong when you don't have to. So having a chip on your shoulder is one of the greatest things that athletes have. And I know a lot of great athletes, that's why they got to where they are. So It was a very helpful tool in a lot of ways, but it also was something that you had to harness.
Tell me about May 15th, 2004.
My major league debut in Toronto. Got about 4 hours of sleep, I think. I've never been so nervous in my life. And just remember walking in, you know, to the clubhouse, kind of not knowing what the heck was going on, and then seeing the jersey. And, you know, the Red Sox, you don't have your name on your jersey at home. So I was very fortunate to know what number I was, because it said Euclid on it with a 20. And that was the lowest number I've ever seen with the Red Sox, because in spring training I would have 50s and 70s. So I was just super proud just to have that low number. And facing Pat Hinkin that day, and my first at bat, I got a 2-1 changeup. I popped up like really, really high and just missed it. And then I got that same pitch, a 2-1 changeup again. My next at-bat hit a home run, and I think it went 2-for-4 on the day. But it was just an amazing, amazing day of all the hard work, all the sacrifice along the way, culminated in just one at-bat and one pitch and hitting it out of the park.
How were the major leagues different from what you thought they would be, perception and reality?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the one thing when you're down in the minor leagues, your goal and dream is to get to the major leagues. That's the end. That's the end goal, is I want to become a major leaguer. That is such a huge feat, and that's your focus. And then sometimes you kind of question, like, are you good enough to play against some of these greats that are in the league and that are future Hall of Famers? And I think that's where, once you get over that hurdle and understanding that you belong on that field with all these other great players, I think that's when the perception of, oh man, I can play at this level. I can compete with these guys. And I think the hardest thing for me, what happened with becoming a major leaguer, was the attention. You definitely become famous real quick in Boston. And I never really thought about that. I never thought about the fame that came with it. So I think the fame was a little hard for me in a lot of ways, with my personality and how I could handle it at times. But it also was one of the greatest things too, because it helped me raise a lot of money for our charity that we created and did a lot of good in the community. And so you know, with every negative, there's some kind of positive that you can take out of it. So the infamy of being a Major League Baseball player, I probably wasn't prepared for, but along the way, I got a lot of help from a lot of great people.
In about 45 seconds, I know no matter what the sport is, somebody always takes that youngster underneath their wing to kind of show them around. Who was it for you with Boston?
I hung out with Mark Bellhorn a bunch. He was a close friend. But we had a lot of great teammates. Johnny Damon helped me out a lot. Trot Nixon was a very big influence on helping me out. And just being around David and Manny and all those guys, Jason Veritek and Doug Mirabelli, and there was just a lot of great guys that I was the rookie. They were the veterans, and they just took me under their wing and just showed me how to go about playing the game the right way.
Kevin Youkilis is with us. We'll talk more about his career as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Kevin Youkilis is with us here on Sports Byline. Former first baseman, third baseman, played double-digit years in the majors, won two World Series, one in 2004, the other in 2007. You also got hit a lot, and I often wonder how that happens to a batter. Did you crowd the plate, or did they try to intimidate you? Or what was behind all the number of times you got hit, Kevin?
There was definitely a multitude of different reasons why. Definitely because, you know, I held my hands high. I know a lot of pitchers talked about how pitching coaches would say, hey, just throw it at his hands. And sometimes that would just, you know, come in a little too hot and get smoked by some pitches. But, you know, and sometimes it was on purpose. So there was definitely – I kind of was the punching bag a little bit in a lot of ways for our team, but you know there was times that I had to wear it because we hit some of their players, and you know, for me, yeah, I definitely took a beating with it. But I joke around, I was like, that's how I got paid more money, because on base percentage gets you paid. So you know, any way you can get on base is a really good thing for your team, and that was always my goal, was to get on base, score runs, and win ball games.
You are a good, very good contact hitter, and I remember my conversations with Mark McGwire and also Tony Gwynn. They both said the same thing when I asked them about their philosophy for hitting. They said, see it, hit it. Was it that way for you too?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're going through your ruts, all you're doing is thinking. You have it's called the little man in a lot of ways. I mean, I think in movies you see the good guy and the bad guy on the shoulder talking to the individual, and when you're going bad, you don't have the good guy, bad guy. You just have the bad guy on your shoulder telling you, you know, all these crazy thoughts. And when you're going good, you're just going up there and you're not thinking. You're just giving yourself the little mental cues that you've done over and over and over for years. And you just go in there and you just see the ball and hit the ball and have a plan. I think, you know, for me personally, my goals were always line drives over the shortstop, second base. If I stay within that, you know, that degrees of the field, I knew that I would have the most success possible. So that was my goal, was to try to hit line drives and make the shortstop and second baseman jump.
I like the evaluation that ESPN's John Sickles gave on you. He said, Youkilis is an on-base machine. He never swings at bad pitches, is adept at working the counts and outthinking the pitcher. Unlike some guys who draw lots of walks, Youkilis seldom strikes out. He makes solid contact against both fastballs and breaking pitches. That says a lot to me. What does it say to you?
Well, that's a great compliment. I did strike out like 100 times a year, though. So I kind of tell people, striking out is a part of the game. It doesn't have to be 200 times a year. Like we've kind of moved into that realm. I think there's more strikeouts because guys are trying to drive the ball out of the park more. I'm a firm believer that the best hitters, they square up the ball more. They find ways to compete. They are great with two strikes. They're not scared to strike out because they know that strikeouts are a part of the game, and you just stay within your zone. So for me, I think that's really, I mean, that's an amazing, you know, compliment to say those things. And it was something I really worked hard on, was just trying to be a great hitter and try to get, like I said, you try to get on base any way you can.
You know, it's interesting. First year into the majors, first year into the World Series in 2004, and you guys beat St. Louis 4-0. I was having a dinner for friends, and one of them was Tony La Russa. He was sitting there at the table. There was about, Bill Walsh was with me. There was, other people like that with me. And a couple from Boston walked by the table and said to Tony, you're the best manager in baseball. And this was after the World Series. He said, that's easy for you to say. You won all four games. You know, and what was interesting about that was that the Cardinals had won 105 games that season, and yet you guys had been hot at the end of the season. And everybody I talk to tells me that was really the key. You guys went into the World Series and the playoffs on a roll.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. After being down 3-0 to the Yankees, and just the amazing feat of coming back and taking down one of the greatest. I mean, people talk about it. The 2004 New York Yankees were an amazing, amazing team, and taking them down just gave us so much confidence that we felt like, you know, those guys from the year before. I wasn't there, but in 03, the heartbreak of the Aaron Boone home run and being that much closer to making it to the World Series, I think that just getting over that hurdle, getting back to the World Series, just in that group of guys together, we were just a force to reckon with. And those guys just went out there and they busted their butts and lived up to the hype that they talked about in the locker room.
Yeah, you're right. When you were down 3-0, and I'm just wondering, when you reflect back on it, was there one particular moment in that series against the Yankees that really was the key to coming back and winning that series?
Wow, there were so many, right? And then the ups and downs. I mean, getting your butt kicked. I mean, we were getting our butt kicked in some of those games, the high scoring games, and it was just depressing. And I, looking back, I mean, it's such a blur until I watch one of those games. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened, and that happened. The infamous, Dave Roberts stealing of the base is always a big deal. But, there's just a lot of different moments. Mark Bellhorn's home run was, that was a huge, huge pivotal moment. David Ortiz and all of his clutch performances. But, Manny and his things and Bill Miller. I mean, Bill Miller, his base hit. I mean, that was just unbelievable. A lot of people don't know he won a batting title. Just a great player. So I think it was just the culmination of a great pitching, great defense, and great hitting at the right time.
You know, it's very interesting about the 2007 World Series, because that was really a different type of an event, because of the fact you go against Colorado, the DH comes into play in one way or another, and you didn't get a chance to play on the team's away games, and you were very, very classy about saying, hey, I only care about winning. And everything. But when you look at that series and also playing in Denver, which everybody talks about, the mile-high altitude and everything, tell me about how you saw that World Series with them.
Yeah, I mean, it was we come off of being down 3-1 against Cleveland. That was my best postseason series. You know, I think it was 14-for-28. I was on fire. I mean, there was balls just looping in, and I got a triple on one that went in between the right fielder and the center fielder. It shouldn't have been a triple, but it just fell in crazy. It was just one of those series. And you go on to the World Series, and luckily we were at home the first two games against the Rockies. And we felt like we matched up well. We matched up well against them. We felt like we could handle their pitching, and then we could handle their offense by the pitching staff that we had. But it was hard going into Colorado and being told, hey, you got to take a seat, because, I mean, I was in the zone for the past 2 weeks, and you never want to get cold again. Not playing is where you get cold. But, if you're the manager and you have David Ortiz and Kevin Youkilis, I think you're going to choose David Ortiz 99.99% of the time. So, it didn't, as much. I wanted to be out there, of course. If I'm not, a top competitor at the major level, and I'd be lying to say I wanted to be out there, but it didn't matter to me, because I knew David would be just fine, and David would be the one that could help, bring us the championship home.
Two World Series, two victories in the series. 2013, toward the end of your career, you signed a one-year contract with the Yankees, and when I saw that story, I smiled and I shook my head. And I didn't know that anybody could come from the state of Massachusetts and play for a team in the state of New York. Well, what was behind that decision, and what was that experience, albeit brief, just the 1 year, like for you?
Well, yeah, it was definitely it was the biggest ordeal of my career, that in the spotlight of, oh my God, he's going to sign with the Yankees. But I was talking to somebody the other day about this. I didn't have many offers to teams that were going to be winning teams. There were teams that wanted me and offered me multi-year deals. And I just I didn't want to play on a rebuilding team or a team that was on the fringe. It was questionable, like they might be good that year. So for me, I play the game to win. I playing in Boston, for me, everything was the winning side of it. Winning World Series was everything. And when you play 162 games, you don't want to be on a losing team. It's a long, long season. And when you're losing, it's just miserable. So my main objective was not to, go against the Red Sox fans and all that and get them upset. It was more just for the fact, for me personally, I'm addicted to winning, and I wanted to win. And I felt that was my best shot of winning another World Series, even if it was on the dreaded rivalry of the Yankees and Red Sox. And I actually had a lot of Red Sox fans that came up to me and said, hey, go do it, man. You've done enough for, the city. And a lot of them were upset. The 2012 season didn't end too great, and it was a tough year. And I think a lot of them were really upset how that was handled. So I got a lot of encouragement from some good people. And playing, I got my back, I got herniated my back, and I had to get back surgery. So my season was cut short. So it was a tough year in that sense of having a really bad injury that still to this day I feel.
Let's talk post-career for just a moment. You are the owner of the Loma Brewing Company, Brew Pub, and if you happen to be finding yourself out there in California in the Bay Area, check it out at Los Gatos, California. But you recently launched and host the Greek God of Hops podcast. I love that name, and it covers beers and baseball. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I've been going back and forth on doing a podcast for a long time, and part of it is Loma Brewing Company is a brew pub down in Los Gatos, California. It's been my dream to own a craft brewery. I've been a big craft beer fan. I joke around that I probably drank less beer than I ever have in my life now that I'm an owner. But it's been a unique project that's helped grow me as an individual, to learn the business side of things and to learn how, I'm learning every day, especially in the time of COVID, just running a business, how tough it is. But, we started this Greek God of Hops podcast because I feel like I have a great network of friends and people that I've met along the way that I'd love just to sit down and talk with them and give their stories. I'm going to sit down with people from many different fields that I'm not even used to in my own life. And I think by sitting down and talking to people about their professions and things that are outside the box that I know, not only is it helping me gain, but it's helping an audience gain some knowledge of what it takes to be successful in different careers. So it's kind of a fun project that we're going to do and sit down with some very cool people that I met along the way.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that, because life stories are really more important than statistics when it comes to sports. At least I've found that way in talking to athletes. Nobody can really relate to hitting a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. But I remember when Willie Mays was my first guest on the network show here, I asked him, you were 16 years old, you grew up in Alabama, how tough was it for you to play a white man's sport? And that answer is something that everybody wants to hear, and I sense that's what you're doing with the podcast.
Yeah, I think, a lot of it's just, picking the brains of people and just kind of trying to get to know. Sometimes these people are very famous, and what I do is I don't talk about their actual job. I talk about their life. I talk about their relationships, talk about things that people might not know about them that they can't read in a newspaper. But like you said, like the stats, or, hey, you saw their movie, or you love their album, their musician. So it's for people to sit down and understand some of these people that I've become friends with, get to know their personalities, get to know them as individuals and people, and kind of a fun, fun way for them to like just loosen up. And I think that's the key to all this, is getting people comfortable and just talking about what they love to do in life.
We only have about a minute left. And when you think back on your life and your career, what is that one moment, Kevin, that is kind of ingrained in your mind that you'll never forget?
Wow. I think for me, it's the struggles and how you get out of them. I think no matter what you do in life, it's easy when everything's going right. It's hard when things are going wrong, but it's those moments when you get out of the struggle and you finally see the positive from all the hard work, from all the sacrifice that you put in, and all the frustration. So, for me, like I said, it was the draft, when I got drafted in the eighth round by the Boston Red Sox. That was such a key moment in my life that I was struggling. My junior year, like, I had to go to Cape Cod League and prove my worth. And finally, just getting that opportunity of being drafted and saying, okay, I have my chance. So I think being drafted is probably my number one experience with baseball. And then outside of baseball, it's just my family, my wife, my kids, and just all the experiences that we've had together and growing and learning to be a better dad and a better husband. I think it's always work. And, you know, life is not easy, and relationships aren't easy, and being a father is not easy. And I think for me, it's just growing and getting better as I age.
Kevin, I want to thank you. You are welcome here anytime on Sports Byline. This has been enjoyable for me, and I know everybody who listens as well. Take care, my friend.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Kevin Youkilis with us, former first and third baseman, most notably with the Boston Red Sox, won two World Series titles. We continue on America's Sports Talk Show.